Welcome to Torah Rimecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Lynn Kraft, and today we'll be learning Malachim Aleph Perek Yudchet. After 3 years of drought, during which Hashem sent subtle messages to Eliyahu to rescind his decree, which Eliyahu ignored, Hashem finally told Eliyahu to appear before Ahav so that he could bring the rain back. When Eliyahu returned to find Ahav, we're told that Ahav and his servant Ovadia were desperately looking for food since the famine was so bad, and that they had split up at Ahav's suggestion in order to increase their chances of finding something to eat. Instead of finding Ahav, however, Eliyahu first found Ovadia. When we first meet Ovadia in Perek Zayin, in Pasuk Zayin, we're told that he feared Hashem greatly and that he had been illegally sustaining 100 Nevi'i Hashem by providing them with bread and water while they were hiding in caves, as they had been banned from the country by Yezebel. In fact, even without hearing about Ovadia's heroic actions on behalf of these Nevi'i Hashem, we would have known that Ovadia served Hashem from his very name, Ovadia being a contraction of the words Oved Ka, servant of God. And yet, ironically, Ovadia did not serve only Hashem. He also served his master, Ahav. The psukim themselves express this confusion on the part of Ovadia in that the word Adon, master, when seen in these psukim, sometimes refers to Eliyahu, the Navi of Hashem, and sometimes refers to Ahav, the king who served the Baal. In fact, even though Ovadia was excited to speak to Eliyahu, he was very nervous to carry out the mission Eliyahu had asked him to complete, namely to bring Ahav to Eliyahu, out of fear for his life. He was nervous that when he left Eliyahu to get Ahav, Eliyahu would disappear again, and Ahav would then kill him upon finding out that he had lost Eliyahu yet again. Ovadia seemed caught between his two masters, until Eliyahu convinced him to carry out his mission by swearing in the name of Hashem that he would see Ahav that very day and he wouldn't escape. But why are we told this story? What is so important about Eliyahu's conversation with Ovadia that it takes up more psukim than the actual conversation he had with Ahav himself, which follows? Perhaps Ovadia's dilemma was the dilemma of Bnei Yisrael. Just as Ovadia was caught between his two masters and couldn't choose between them until Eliyahu convinced him to follow himself, the Navi of Hashem, so too Bnei Yisrael were caught between what they believed were two gods, Hashem and the Baal, and they couldn't choose between them until Eliyahu ultimately convinced them at Har Carmel to follow Hashem. In this way, Eliyahu's conversation with Ovadia in the beginning of the Perek foreshadows the competition on Har Carmel that follows. After Ovadia informed Ahav that Eliyahu had come to see him, Ahav came to greet Eliyahu in Pasuk Yud Zayin, and he greeted him by calling him an Ocher Yisrael, a destroyer of Bnei Yisrael, to which Eliyahu responded that he wasn't the one who had destroyed Bnei Yisrael, but rather it was Ahav who destroyed Bnei Yisrael by abandoning Hashem and his mitzvot and by worshipping Avodah Zarah. Eliyahu then asked Ahav to invite all of Bnei Yisrael, plus the 450 Nevi'i Baal and the 450 Nevi'i Asherah, who were on Yezebel's payroll, to a showdown atop Har Carmel, which Ahav then did. Why did Eliyahu choose Har Carmel of all places to stage this competition? Firstly, I think it's really important to realize that Har Carmel was a mountain, which, as we know, rises high above the earth towards the heavens. In fact, we know that of all places on earth, mountains are the highest we can get. Historically, many important events that involved Bnei Yisrael's relationship with Hashem, specifically entering into or renewing a brit with Hashem, took place on mountains. Think Matan Torah, think Har Gerizim v'Har Eival. Perhaps the reason why these particular relationship-forming or affirming events took place on mountains was because it was the closest that Bnei Yisrael could get to the Shamayim. On the other hand, we have to realize that even the highest mountain is still rooted to the ground, sending the message that the purpose of all these inspirational events that take place as high as possible and as close to Hashem, the whole purpose of those events is that the inspiration taken from them must be brought back down and applied to everyday life. But of all the mountains in Eretz Yisrael, why specifically Har Carmel? Perhaps because when standing atop this mountain range, one can see Sidon to the north and Malchut Yisrael to the south. The location of Har Carmel therefore reflected the choice that Bnei Yisrael had to make between the God of Sidon to the north and the God of Malchut Yisrael to the south. Once everyone had gathered atop Har HaKarmel, Eliyahu addressed his speech not to Ahav, nor to the Nevi'ei Baal and Asherah, but rather to Bnei Yisrael, because it was they whom he cared most about. He accused Bnei Yisrael of vacillating between Hashem and the Baal, of being confused religiously and not clearly choosing one over the other. Because they had adopted a polytheistic outlook, Bnei Yisrael had thought it was okay to worship both Hashem and the Baal. But Eliyahu demanded religious clarity and commitment, because a dual loyalty is to Hashem the same as complete rejection. At first, the people responded to Eliyahu's charge to choose between Hashem and the Baal with complete silence, since they couldn't express a clear commitment. Their lack of articulation reflected their confusion. It was exactly this lack of clarity that Eliyahu sought to challenge on Har HaKarmel. If Bnei Yisrael's silence and passivity expressed their confusion, then Eliyahu's goal on the mountain was to elicit active responses from Bnei Yisrael, demonstrating that they will have gained a sense of clarity as to who is the true God. So Eliyahu proceeded to explain the terms of the contest, so to speak, to everyone. He, who alone represented Hashem, again, remember, all other Nevi'ei Hashem were forced into hiding at this point from Yizevel's threat. So he, who was the only one representing Hashem on the one hand, and the 450 Nevi'ei Baal plus the 400 Nevi'ei Asherah on the other hand, who represented the Baal, would each take a cow and place the cow upon wooden branches without any fire. Each team would call out to their god, and the god who would respond with fire to consume his carbon would be proven as the real god. This description elicited the first response on the part of Bnei Yisrael, as they told Eliyahu that they approved of the terms of the contest with the words, Tov Hadavar, this thing is good. Eliyahu allowed the Nevi'ei Baal to take their turn first. They chose a cow, they called out to the Baal from morning until afternoon, but of course nothing happened. At noon, Eliyahu, in fact, started to mock them and told them maybe they should call out louder because maybe their god was busy talking to someone else or contemplating intellectual matters, or maybe he went somewhere far away, or maybe he was sleeping and needed to be woken up. So maybe if they spoke a little bit louder, he would come out of his reverie or he would be called out from the distance and respond. To which the Nevi'ei Baal responded by calling out even louder and, in addition, by gashing their skin, by being mitgodedim, which is actually something that we're told in Devarim Perek Yudalid, with loted godedu that we ourselves are not allowed to do. But the Nevi'ei Baal did it. It was part of their worship of Avodah Zarah, which may be why, or one of the reasons why we ourselves are not allowed to do it. So the Nevi'ei Baal called even louder. They gashed their skin in lent blood, and they did this from the time of noon until the time of Mincha arrived, and of course, still nothing happened. Once the Nevi'ei Baal's efforts were proven unsuccessful, it was then Eliyahu's turn. Eliyahu, we'll see, engaged in specific actions in order to teach Bnei Yisrael certain lessons. First, he repaired a Mizbeach of Hashem that had previously been destroyed. But why didn't Eliyahu just use or build a new Mizbeach? Why did he feel the need to repair an old one? Perhaps Eliyahu was trying to teach the people a lesson in tshuva. By repairing a broken Mizbeach, he was inviting them to repair their own broken relationship with Hashem. Next, Eliyahu gathered 12 stones, and we're told that these 12 stones corresponded to the number of the Shvatim of Bnei Yisrael, and he gathered these 12 stones, we're told, in order to repair the Mizbeach. But why would Eliyahu gather 12 stones corresponding to the 12 Shvatim if there were only 10 Shvatim in Malchut Yisrael? Perhaps Eliyahu wanted to teach Bnei Yisrael the value of unity, that they should be unified with Malchut Yehuda in worshiping the same God as they did, so that all 12 Shvatim would worship Hashem together. Eliyahu's next step was to tell Bnei Yisrael to fill up 4 jugs of water 3 times each, totaling 12, representing the same idea as above. And he told them specifically to pour this water upon the wooden branches, in order to make the miracle of Hashem's consuming fire even more miraculous, and clearly proving that the fire could not have been brought about by anyone other than Hashem. Finally, Eliyahu davened to Hashem, reminding Bnei Yisrael of their avot, their heritage that they had since ignored, and reminding Bnei Yisrael of what they should believe, claiming, Ki ata Hashem Elokim, Hashem, you are the only God. Only after Eliyahu's tefillah, And after B'nai Yisrael were finally actively engaged in the process by filling up the jugs of water and pouring them onto the Mizbeach, onto the wooden branches, only then did the fire of Hashem consume Eliyahu's karban. B'nai Yisrael responded by falling on their faces and calling out, Hashem hu ha'elokim, Hashem hu ha'elokim. This, of course, should sound familiar to all of us, since we quote B'nai Yisrael here every year during the Ilah of Yom Kippur. We show Hashem on Yom Kippur that we are 100% committed to Him and only Him, just like B'nai Yisrael were finally able to do at Har HaKarmel because of Eliyahu's actions. Now that B'nai Yisrael's religious commitment has finally been clarified, Eliyahu has finally achieved his goal. That this goal has been accomplished was even further clarified when B'nai Yisrael immediately thereafter slaughtered the Nevi'ei Baal at Eliyahu's behest. It has finally become clear exactly where B'nai Yisrael's allegiance lay. Shockingly, Achav did not do anything to prevent the killing of his wife's Nevi'ei Baal. It seems that Achav had been convinced about Hashem's primary godliness as well. So much so that Eliyahu himself danced in front of Achav's chariot all the way back to Shomron, giving him the Kavod HaMelech, the respect due to a king that he had never given to him before. However, this change of Achav's, we must note, was unfortunately a little too quick. Usually people who make such quick turnarounds don't succeed in holding on to it. This, in fact, shows us what a weak character Achav really was. He seems to have been influenced by whoever was around. When he was with Izebel, he went along with her Baal worship. When he was with Eliyahu, he went along with his worship of Hashem. Achav himself did not really seem to stand for anything. This lack of backbone is a character trait that we're going to see throughout the rest of the prakim of the Sefer of Melachim Aleph, in which Achav features, starting with the first pasuk in the next parak, which we'll learn together tomorrow. Something that we can learn from this sudden turnaround of Achav is that change can't happen too quickly or too shallowly. For real change to stick, we have to do things more gradually, a little bit more slowly. As a cab driver once told me my year in Israel, Hakol b'madrigot, we had to do things in steps. We can't do a 180-degree turnaround one day and expect to stay there the next. Instead, we should move in much smaller increments towards our goal, because it's gradual change that lasts, not sudden and quick turnarounds. And this is one of the most important lessons that we can learn from Achav, because as we'll see in the next year, Achav's turnaround that happened so quickly on top Har HaKarmel doesn't last for more really than one night. And if we ourselves want to implement changes in our own lives, especially spiritual changes, it is incumbent upon us to learn from Achav not to do it very quickly, not to do it suddenly, but rather to take things on slowly. We may have great, amazing goals, but it's important that we not try to accomplish those goals overnight, but rather that we split them up into smaller steps and take each increment one step at a time so that it can become a real, true, inherent part of who we are, slowly and gradually, so that we can make lasting changes. Thank you for studying together, Le'iloi Nishmat, Malka Esther, Batzvi Yosef.